Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. This is the Progressive Commentary Hour. And now, continuing with our series of conversations with remarkable minds, the topic, the risk of losing our forests, and how optimistic should we be about climate change? My guest from Ontario, Canada, is Dr. Diana Burchford Kroeger. And if Jane Goodall is the ambassador for the animal kingdom and Vandana Shiva is the ambassador for seeds, then Diana is unquestionably the global ambassador speaking on behalf of the world's trees and forests. I know of no other person who possesses the wisdom of the forest as does Diana. She's an Irish-Canadian researcher, botanical scientist, medical biochemist, and she also has an insight into the mystery or the mysticism of nature. She's written extensively on the molecular biology of trees and their medicinal properties and trees' social interactions in the forest with other forms of life. And she's written on forest conservation, the traditional wisdom trees hold for healing. In the past, Diana has held science posts at the Canadian Department of Agriculture and the University of Ottawa School of Medicine. She is a fellow of the Royal Geographical Society and was named World Visionary by UNTI Reader. Her research gardens outside of Ottawa, which are open to the public, include rare plants from Turkey, Iran, China, and hundreds of rare types of species from the northern forests in other countries, many that are endangered. She's written several spellbinding books, including To Speak to the Trees, My Life's Journey from Ancient Wisdom to a Healing Vision of the Forest. And there is a award-winning documentary, The Call of the Forest, The Forgotten Wisdom of Trees, that highlights Diana's work across many nations exploring the secrets of northern forest. More about her work can be found at calloftheforest.ca. Nice to have you with us today.
Well, thank you. That's a long rigmarole about me.
Understated.
Hey, come here, Gary. You've forgotten one. Hey, you've forgotten one point. I've got a couple of years ago a Doctors of Laws degree, same as Kofi Annan for the forest.
Oh, okay.
And it's never been given to a woman, let alone an Irish woman who speaks Gaelic. So that's my big one.
Good. Well, I didn't know that, so thank you.
Yeah. It was astonishing, really.
I want to begin our discussion by reading something from Jane Braxton Little from Tom Dispatch.
Yeah.
And just to get your input on it. The title of the article is The Dixie Fire Disaster and Me, Can My Town Rebuild After Losing It All? And here's what she says. It's not long. At 10 a.m. on July 22nd, I interviewed a New York University professor about using autonomous robots and drones and other unmanned devices to suppress structural and wildfires. I sent the interview to an online transcription service, walked down the steps of my second floor office in a block to the Greenville post office, where I mailed a check to California Fair Plan for homeowners' fire insurance. Then I drove 25 miles to a dental appointment. I was lucky to make it home before burning debris closed the roads. That night, I became a climate refugee, evacuated from my house thanks to the Dixie Fire. Since then, it scorched a landscape nearly the size of Delaware, destroying 678 homes, and decimated several communities in Indian Valley, where I've been for 46 years. One of them was Greenville, California, a town founded in the Gold Rush era of the 19th century, where I happen to live. I never imagined myself among the 55 million people worldwide whose lives already have been upended by climate change. Maybe no one does until it happens, even though we're obviously the future for significant parts of humanity, this will repeat itself. Those of us who acknowledge the climate disaster, especially those who write about it, may be the last to picture ourselves fleeing the catastrophe scientists have been predicting. Climate change should come as no surprise to any of us, even in Greenville, one of four communities in rural Plumas County, tucked into the mountains of the northern Sierra Nevada range, 230 miles northeast of San Francisco. No one would call most of us progressive. We're a social mishmash of loggers, miners, and ranchers, many of whom strongly supported Donald Trump, despite a disparate population of aging hippies living among us. We squabble over water ditches and whose insurance should cover which parade. We picked to death a solar power project and took 5 years to decide on a design for community building. The town has been in decline since I moved there nearly half a century ago, slowly sinking into the dirt foundation. Anyhow, that's just the beginning of an article. Now, it portends something more significant. Right now, in at least 15 states in the United States, part of Canada, a large section of Siberia, Turkey, and other countries, fires are decimating forests. And yet, we know this is the new beginning. It's not just going to be one off and that's it forever. We can go back, rebuild, everything's fine. It's cyclic. It's every single year because we're in perpetual drought. And yet, the latest news shows that more people are moving to endangered places, like Phoenix, Arizona, for example, where everything's going to go against them, and California, and the beaches, and southern Florida, and the beaches, etc. It's as if all that is happening with nature, all these extreme events, are simply not a part of our conscious awareness. So when we get hit with it, flooding, tornadoes, hurricanes, we simply shrug and go on to the next hour of our day. So when you look at what's happening and has been happening, and you have been one of those individuals sounding a clarion call, let us pay attention to the relationship we have with these forests and these trees. And they're falling on principally deaf ears by state, local, and worldwide governments, as well as individuals. They just want to go back, rebuild, and continue without any insight into what's actually happening. Could you now share with us the larger view that you have and others who are in your mind state about the state of the world today? The forum is yours.
Well, Gary, I'm very sorry for what is happening in California, and even sorrier for what's happening up in the taiga. The taiga forest is forest fires are greater than all of the fires of the globe combined right today. But the taiga is something, it is the boreal forest of Russia. It's a huge, huge, massive area that is in Russia. And, of course, it's out of sight, and therefore it's out of mind. Now, Gary, you and I know a whole pile of things about what's sitting there in front of us. First of all, the face of North America is an enormous one. We have 20% higher solar exposure in North America. So that means that the touch of fire will be greater here as compared to Europe, as compared to other areas. And that's a very important little tiny thing to notice. What has happened in California per se, this is something that is very close to my heart. I love California. I love the forest there. I love the sequoia dendrons that lady is talking about. The giant, giant redwoods are absolutely the wonders, one of the wonders of the world. What's happened in the recent years, in the last 100 years or so maybe, and more recently I suspect, the species called eucalyptus. Many of the eucalyptus, I think there's about 240 of them species in Australia, have been brought into North America, specifically into California. Well, that's fine from one point of view, but there is another point of view about the eucalyptus species that scares the hell out of me. And that is that they're full of resin. That is, they're full of oil. And these species have a flash point, a very, very, very low flash point. And I think it's something in the region of 48 degrees centigrade. Well, in America, in the United States, you reached those temperatures this year. So even without somebody going out and acting in vandalism and starting a fire in California, somebody who's smoking a cigarette or smoking a pipe can flick a cigarette out of a car, travel away. In fact, I saw that happen a number of months ago. Can ride on a motorbike while smoking a cigarette, flick the cigarette out of his mouth into the sideways, and guess what? That can start a fire. And that fire can have a flash point. And that flash point causes sheets of fire. And nobody escapes that. And you found it in California. I'm horrified by what's happening there. I do think, and I did try to, when I was down there, speak to people in power, in political power in California, get those eucalyptus out of the forest, get them out of the area, get them away from houses, and put in things called firewalls. And firewalls are redwoods. They are, as they mature, almost immune to fires because they've been used to fires over the centuries and the generations. That's number one. Now, in general, let's look upon this as a social problem. Let's look upon the whole thing of climate change as a social problem. And I will include myself in this. All of us become lazy. All of us have lost this ability for empathy. And all of us have lost this concept of compassion for the next person sitting down in the chair next to us. We have to renew the grace of compassion. We have to renew the grace of empathy. And we have to put a hand out in help to all others around us. It starts in the home. It starts inside in the heart of the house, of everybody's house. Watch a little less television and get off the couch and do a little bit more for other people. And that will awaken your mind to the fact that you, as a human being, are needed on this planet. Now, I say to you, you are needed, and I am selfishly saying to you, you are needed, because I need you. I need you as an ambassador with a story that's got to be spread all over the United States. The United States is the leading country in the world, and I want it to stay that way. I want you American people to stand up straight, stand up tall, and look at your forest. I want you to go out into your garden and plant a tree. My bioplan for the next 6 years for you is to plant a tree native to native. That means California, that means a redwood. Out on the East Coast, that means a white oak. Or a bow oak. Central area, the same thing. I want you to plant one tree per year for the next 6 years and look after those trees. Make sure that those trees are doing well, are flourishing, and that means you've got to get a bucket of water and water them. That means you also have to buy a shovel to dig a hole to plant the tree. Now, what that does for all of us is a tree is a green machine. We know it now. We didn't know it 50 years ago, and we don't even know today that the trees affect the feeding of the oceans. The trees affect the sky, affect the weather patterns, and potable water. Do you hear me in California? Potable water, that is fresh, clean water going into your aquifers. So that is the bioplan that I have in mind. those trees, the numbers for the whole global community is something in the region of 50 billion trees go back in and you protect your forests. It is the cheapest, and the word is cheapest, way to do it. What trees do is they need carbon dioxide. We have taken down too many trees. And what the trees do is something fantastic. It's in quantum physics. It's in quantum mechanics. It's extraordinary what they do. They pull the carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere using a magnesium ion. And the ion is in the chlorophyll. And that's the color of the chlorophyll. That the chlorophyll is green. It lends the color to the whole of the patina of nature. And this is the most important reaction that is happening in the world. It is called a photosynthetic reaction, and it requires quantum mechanics. And it forms the sun. The photons from the sun come into the leaf, and they jump in a wave pattern and are caught by the chlorophyll, and they're transported into the production of oxygen and the production of sugars. The sugars go into the leaf, go into the tree in a form of wood. Wood builds up from the carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. It is all invisible. It's taking place in front of your eyes today, tomorrow, and please God, the next day. That is the way we get rid of carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere. And for God's sake, the tree is a green machine. Lean against it. Think about it. It is the basis of 64% of all the medicines used on the planet. If you've had cancer in your family, get down on your bloody knees and thank a tree. If any of you men have prostate cancer, will you, for God's sake, take an idea and go out into the muir woods, go out into the forests of the sequoia dendron, and that will stop your cancers. Those of you who've got fragile problems in your life, go out and find an evergreen. A pine will do. An evergreen will work, but a pine will do. And it will boost your immune system by breathing in alpha and beta pinenes into your system, and you have a protection to cancers that last for 1 month. Then do it again, then do it again, then do it again in this time of COVID. So you have a miracle in front of your eyes by way of the forest, but we've never, ever appreciated it. We've taken down too much forest. That is all we have done. You can proceed with your life. You can do all kinds of other things with your life, but for God's sake, save the forest. It is Gaia, the planet's way of maintaining oxygen in the atmosphere. Now, sit back for a minute, take a cup of tea, put your feet up, and I'm going to ask you to run an experiment for yourself. Stop breathing. Hold your breath for the next second, couple of seconds, couple of minutes. Hold your breath. See how long you can hold your breath, right? That means what you're doing is you're not allowing oxygen to go into your lungs. Oxygen produces an oxidation reaction in the body, and this is the basis of breaking up food and feeding your own body. Oxygen is needed. Now I'm asking you a question. I'm not telling you anything. I'm just asking you a question. Where the hell do you think the oxygen is coming from? Where in God's name do you think it's coming? It is in the air. It's really true. If you hold your breath and keep holding your breath, you're going to die, because you're going to die from lack of oxygen. Your heart is going to have a hell of a problem. Your circulation is going to have a hell of a problem. I'm an expert in that area. I've got a PhD in that, like one of these bloody PhDs that I have. So, yeah, I can tell you a lot about that. You're going to die. Where's the oxygen coming from? I'm asking you, where is that oxygen coming? It's coming from the forest. It is coming from the trees. It is coming from the forest under the ocean, around the landscape of the ocean itself, by way of algae. That is where the oxygen is coming from. So if you think you can continue living your life normally with a lack of oxygen in the air and too much carbon dioxide, You got something coming to you. So help me to make it better. Help me to look after the forest. Help me to speak to you about the trees, because nobody else is doing it. I am not making money out of this. I am not looking for fame. I am not looking for anything like that. I am looking with empathy in my heart to you, compassion for your children to you, hoping there is a future for your children and your grandchildren if we do this. That's all you have to do. That is all you have to do. Then you can come in into the house and watch, listen to Gary. Listen to his podcast. You can come into the house and watch a bit of television. You can put your feet up and have a beer. And then you can say, like they say in my family, thank Daisy for the help. That's me. My name, sometimes they call me Daisy. Some thank Daisy for the help. It's very simple. I'm not a member of the Church of the Holy Dollar. I'm not a member of Gates' group and all of the internet multi-billionaires, all those boys bashing out into space. No, I'm here at home. I'm looking after my forest. I'm looking after the species that are endangered so you can have cancer treatments in the future. That's what I'm looking at. And that's all I am doing. No more, no less. That's it.
Beautiful overview. Thank you. I'd like to continue that by examining a frightening landmark global report that appeared this month. It was released by the Morton Arboretum and Botanical Gardens Conservation International. The report states that between 1 in 2 to 1 in 3 trees worldwide face extinction, and human activity contributes to this decline. The report states at least 30% of the world's 60,000 tree species now face extinction, and it could be 50%. This is twice the number of animals, birds, amphibians, and reptiles combined that also face extinction. We already know that the lungs of the planet, the Amazon rainforest, is on life support due to over deforestation, what you mentioned. And rather than try to treat the problem, Brazil's mad president, Bolsonaro, would rather just rip out the Earth's lungs altogether. That is what happens when a military person is elected into a seat of office. They can only find solutions by waging war. So my question is simple. Okay, what then, after half of all the trees vanish, what will the rest of the planet and human and animal habitat look like? You mentioned holding your breath, and as you are correct, without oxygen, the brain stops. You become brain dead, the heart stops, circulation stops. But then I have to balance what you said, which is an ideal and something that is clearly doable. It's not that we don't have the technology and we don't have the resources. We do. But ask the average college professor, ask the average college student, ask the average homemaker, what exactly are you changing in your lifestyle to prevent young kids in Africa, in Niger, in the Congo, from being worked to death to get cobalt to go into your cell phone? And what are you doing to prevent China from exploiting all the world's precious minerals? They own 90% of them, and the hardwoods down in the Andes, where they have large tracts of land that they have purchased, and those are hardwoods, and they're taking that to build furniture to sell. They're building computers to sell. So everybody wants what you say. You won't get five people who will say, no, we shouldn't be planting trees. We should do nothing. No, they'll say yes. Everybody wants change, but they don't want to do the change. They don't want to surrender a thing, change anything. And if you suggest it, give up meat, give up dairy, give up give up the things that you feel that are important to your life that actually are not. Try to downsize to a higher quality of life instead of simply an artificial standard of living. Then they start getting very argumentative. So all the major nations, Great Britain, United States, India, China, certainly at the top of the list, are all basing everything upon growing their economy, what is called the gross domestic product. So the more jobs they create, the more factories they open, that's all they count. They never look at the consequences to the environment. So on the one hand, everything is getting worse worldwide. 12 years ago, I did a study. We published it on the 7 tipping points. Today, there are 44 tipping points, and we've already tipped 20 of those. So now we are facing the high probability that in the very near future, possibly as next 2 years, parts of this great planet will no longer be able to sustain life as it has in the past. That means a massive amount of environmental migrants. You know, you see what happens now with political migrants. They're being pushed away as if their life doesn't matter. And imagine then people who cannot grow food. Imagine people where it's too dry, too hot. You mentioned that at the temperature, 47 degrees Celsius, around 119 degrees Fahrenheit. My God, we had, Sicily was 121 degrees 2 weeks ago, and Sun Valley, California, it hit 128 degrees. So these are not exceptional temperatures, and you said those are enough to cause the resin in these trees. And by the way, Florida has gazillion of these trees. They were brought over from Australia in the 1920s and 30s to soak up the wetlands in Florida so that they could expand the human development. And now these trees are a blight, and every time there's a fire in the Everglades, these are the ones fueling that fire. So this is the counterbalance to your argument. Would you address that, please?
Well, no, Gary, may I say, I'm asking people in the United States to please read my book. One book I have written that's gone crazy. It's The Sweetness of a Simple Life. That's the title of the book. And what it is how to make your life simpler and sweeter and more enjoyable. And that's really, you know, that kind of really has really touched people's hearts. So kind of get that out of the library. If you can't afford the money, just go get the blinking book and read it. Right, it's easy to read. Now, one of my answers is I don't know. I am a guest on your show, Gary, and I don't mean to insult people. I don't mean to do. I am going to make a political statement here. Trump got one thing right. He really got one thing right, and he said one statement that impressed me is America first. All right? America first is a very, very interesting slogan to have for America, and I wish to God you'd listen to it a little bit more closely. Now, next thing I'm going to mention is a shopping list. All of you gentlemen and ladies in the United States have a shopping list. You put your shopping list maybe on your kitchen table, or you put it on the fridge. You put it somewhere. You put it in your iPhone. God knows where you may have it. When you are shopping for a car, for a machine, for a piece of food, for anything you want that is needed in your household, would you please remember that statement, America first? You will look, please, at where this product is made. It could be a pound of butter. It could be a car. It could be anything at all that your children need. Buy America first. Go and see that there is a U.S. dot made in the U.S. of A. What you are doing by not doing that, by buying, let's call them Chinese items, let's do that, because you have sold the machinery of work into the Orient. That is a great mistake, because you're losing your sovereignty. And by doing that, you are becoming less of a country. When I go shopping, I buy Canadian first, and I look for America second. I want to keep my money on this continent. Now, all of you listening to me, it's easy to do. That is very, very easy to do. So it shifts the agenda into your mind to look after yourself and to look after the people around us on this continent. Now, let me talk about what you were talking. Just first off, your points are the species that are getting lost by way of the forest. Let me tell you one species I have up here. It is called the cucumber tree. It is called Magnolia acuminata. That species is really, that species of tree is very, very important tree for feeding the birds, and it has very important medicines in it too. There is one left in my arboretum. There is another one growing somewhere near the St. Lawrence. I know where it's growing. There are two left, to my knowledge, in Canada. Canada has had meetings, I think maybe monthly, for a whole 20 years to see what they can do about this tree. This tree, this year is a mast year. I don't know if you know what that means. It means there's so much stress on the planet here in North America that every single growing thing is producing in excess. I will have seeds on this tree this year. I've already examined the cucumbers that are growing on this tree. I will have seeds. I will be putting them out into the public. I will be given instructions of provenance on these trees. These trees are very, very valuable for you, for your health. That's just one of many, many that I'm doing. So one person can do a lot. When the politicians sit down and they just kind of strum their fingers on a desk. So that's one tree. But we have 60,000 trees. We have species that are getting lost day by day by day. And I really, really do need to do a second and a third film on this. I really need to do that. So please look at Call of the Forest. Please think about whoever is listening to me. I need to do another film. I need to do a walk around my forest, my arboretum, and tell you the meaning, the ancient meaning of all of these trees. Now, a lot of you, I'm just going to go on a tangent just for 1 minute. All of you, or most of you, have come from Europe. A lot of you have got an Irish or a Scottish or a Welsh genome in you. Some of you do, some of you don't. The first language that Europe has spoken is the language of the Celtic culture. And that script is called the Ogham script, O-G-H-A-M. And the basis of that script is the forest. Rather than the letter A, you have the sacred tree called an ulm. And out of that alphabet, you now are speaking a language and listening to me, the language of English. And in English, you use the word today all over the United States, hospital, hospital. Maybe you're going to hospital. Oispidel, an oispidel aus Gaelga. I'm speaking in Irish now. An oispidel aus Gaelga. Hospital is an Irish word. You get into your car. Car is an old Celtic word. That's where the meaning of the forest before the time of Christ became important. From the Ogham script and the Ogham Creaf. Under the laws of Brehon in Ireland, and this Celtic civilization was an enormous civilization. You came to North America because you were treated by colonial people in a really disrespecting way. But you have a monstrous, wonderful, extraordinary history behind you because you were a woodland people. The treasures of your life were the woodland. And today, Gary, we have to remember that. We have to remember the importance of what was there 2,000 years ago, because there was a greater protection for the global forests 2,000 years ago than there is to this very day. And today is Friday. And we're losing them at an extraordinary rate. We're losing them, and it will cost us our lives.
I appreciate your insights. Thank you. If you were to be sitting in front of the current emperors of the world, meaning the billionaire and capitalist class of Wall Street and institutions like the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank and the World Economic Forum. What would be your overall assessment of the state of the planet's forest right now?
I would say if you're going to wait, and let's talk to the World Bank, because I used to know a whole pile of people at the World Bank, and the emperors and the people like Gates, and all of the people on the internet, the Elon Musk, whom I have some correspondence with. I do have some inkling of some of these people, as a matter of fact, even though I live very simply. I would say to you, you boys, first of all, make sure you pay your taxes so that ordinary people have a better life, number one. Number two, I want you to know that you are also living on the planet. The planet is your home. Now, Elon, you want to go to Mars. Yeah, that sounds like just marvelous. If you want to go to Mars, go there. But in the meantime, your boys, your sons, are going to be living on the planet. I will give you another 5 years. And in 5 years' time, because of the forest coming down so drastically all over the world, our weather patterns will change drastically also. I would say to you that you will not be able to launch your rockets. You will not be able to launch in space because of the hurricane winds that will be coming up from the southern regions of the United States. I would say that the heat in the oceans is going to be tremendous. I would say that there will be huge fish kills. There are already fish kills happening. I would say there will not be oxygen in the atmosphere. And no matter what you do, no matter what industries you can conceive of right now, you will not be able to produce that bolus of oxygen necessary for the life of the whole planet. So listen very closely to me. You may be gods of the Church of the Holy Dollar. You may very well be. But scepter and crown come tumbles down, and in the dust be equal made with the poor sickle, scythe, and spade. We are all equal in this. We all have lungs. We all need oxygen, even the very rich. So listen up to me. It is important what I'm saying. The photosynthetic reaction in the planet is the most important reaction in the planet, and you are abusing it, and you will do it on your peril and on your children's peril and on your grandchildren's lives.
Our century is already being defined by a constant, never-ending quest for new human technological solutions to tackle the problems created by the previous human technological solutions. Mm-hmm. Our industrial civilization and capitalism have brought upon us the Anthropocene age, but now we believe it will be geoengineering or new nuclear power plants that will save us. And there are huge investments and untold profits to be made by placing our faith into the knowledge of humanity's ingenuity rather than the wisdom of nature and what nature is telling us. So please speak a little about how the institutions of science, and even more so our governments, are now failing us and further perpetrating the problems being brought about by climate change and environmental destruction.
This is a real juicy one. This is absolutely gorgeous for me. Now, first of all, Gary, you do realize that women, because they have ovaries, cannot be brilliant, right? Okay? Yeah, you do understand that. The women in the world, or I'm talking to all the women here in the world, because you've got a set of ovaries, sling them over your shoulders. No, you can't be smart. But now let me come from under the rug for you on this one. Forget all of your nuclear power. Unless you run the nuclear power down to zero, you don't run it down to one molecule of carbon dioxide, which actually probably technically it could be done. Nuclear power would work if you run it down to zero. The problem is that you can't do that right now. And what you have left is radioactive material, which is detrimental to life and will be detrimental to life, depending on, you know, whether it's uranium, plutonium, so on and so forth. It will be detrimental to life for a very, very long time, thousands of years. Now, in medicine, we do use isotopes, and they're short-lived isotopes. You have to have them, you pop them in, and you know flow dynamics and so on and so forth in the body. That's another one thing. But for those of you working in this area, and mostly it's Army people who are working in this area, try and look at nuclear, let's call it PAM nuclear, down to just one molecule of CO2. I think it can be done. I think we need to look at that. Then there's another thing called entanglement, Gary, which you probably know quite a bit about this too. Entanglement is fantastic. What we've just found, and this is what Einstein considered, he was very interested in light. He was very interested in light has two vectors. It has a straight line vector and has a wave characteristic. The wave characteristic is the one thing he didn't understand. The wave characteristic is the phenomenon which feeds the trees, the planets, the photosynthetic reaction. Einstein actually didn't get that one. And probably because he didn't have a shovel, he used a violin, but never mind. He was a brilliant, brilliant man nonetheless. But now we know that the wave characteristic of light is a phenomenal thing, and it feeds photosynthesis by way of quantum mechanics, by way of quantum movement, valency triggering, and then the energy of that valency electron goes into the wood and goes in and forms the sugars in the wood. I mean, this is phenomenal. But now, my God, this is just very, very interesting. In entanglement, okay, we know electrons can produce entanglement. Now, this is a thing in physics. It sounds actually very, very complex, but it isn't really. What it is entanglement, one electron can be in two places at once. All right. Now, they have found that photons from the sun can also be in two places at once. Now you go back to zero and one, the numeral basis of the computer system, right? So now we're flogging along with our computers, and we need a whole pile of energy and all of that kind of stuff. But photonic entanglement can build quantum computers. When you have quantum computers, you've got something real in your hand. You've got the ability to do mathematics at a scale absolutely unknown today. Phenomenal. It's true. These photonic entanglements, it's just phenomenal. Then we have quantum machines, right? Now we're finding that if you walk up the stairs, the movement in the electron phase within a molecular structure can generate sufficient energy to form work. Work, as you and I understand it, we go out into the field, we dig a hole or something, but work, quantum work, is something you turn around and you look at maybe a hive of bees. Or you look at mycelial growth, or you look at mycoplasmas have this quantum voice within them. I mean, we're into something really, really interesting, really, really unbelievable. Now, let me leave you go. I mean, I'm very interested in all of these things. I mean, I have physics and mathematics on one side of my bed, and then I have my who done it on the other side. So what Einstein said at the end of his life was, the greatest power any scientist has is the power of the imagination. And that power is found in poetry. We have neglected our poetry. We shouldn't do that. Children have poetry. That power is found in paintings. It's the power of the subconscious. big that they're invisible. But please step back. Take a couple of steps back and look at a tree. And will you, for God's sake, read my books, get them out of the library, and just read a little bit of them so it gives you some understanding of what we share our genome with. The genetics of a tree is almost identical to yours, except for two bases. And do you think they're idiots? Do you think they're doing nothing on this planet? Do you think because it's taken 400 million years to produce a tree that they're worthless? Sorry, babies, you're wrong. The tree is as worthy of this planet as you are. And the fact is that if the trees go, you will die. The other fact is if you die, the trees will still live. So it is in the imagination. It's in the imagination of man. And honestly, Gary, I'm very excited about the future because I think we have this quantum structure in physics to look at. And my God, it's exciting. So now you've got me on a good rattle there.
Please continue. You're just getting started here.
You and I are bad news for one another, I'm afraid. I mean, just think about this, okay? We all have curtains in our house, okay? And curtains can move, all right? How about putting quantum mechanics into your curtain? How about building that into your robes? How about building that as a source of energy into the roof, onto your robes? And to everything you do. You feed off the grid. You feed off what you put in. I mean, there's no escape for that thought. That's a momentous thought. So, I mean, it's right there. We have inert materials, as you know, argon and helium and so on and so forth. They're inert, so you can't really mess around with them too much. But there are exothermic reactions. Endothermic reactions, and what that means, a reaction, an exothermic reaction would be like an atom bomb, something like that, where you put two things together and you get an excess of energy produced. And an endothermic is where it squeezes in energy into it. Well, black holes can come to mind on this one. So we do have all of the blackboard with all of the material written for us. All we have to do is look at the blackboard, understand the blackboard, and then put the bits together. And if we put the bits together properly, we will be the first generation of people, ordinary people, who will do really extraordinary things. Because believe you me, I am not thinking with my with that part of female part of my body. I'm equal to a man in any way, and men are equal to women. So if we hold hands across the world as equal people, we can do amazing things. And it's all in the imagination. You know, when Einstein was dying, he said, please look after nature. When all of the top physicists in the world were dying, they said, please look after nature. Somehow they had an epiphany at the end of their life, and they realized they had missed the big object. They had missed the thing that was so important to them because death came to their door. And death is the great equalizer for everybody, and before you die, you do think of these things. So now we are alive. Now we can grab things. Now we can grab research. Now I'd say to the United Nations, put bloody money into the universities. Give a bag of money. Don't allow the children to go away penniless when they come up with brilliant ideas. Give them some money for them. Push them along. People like me, help me. For people like me, what I want is $50 million. I need $50 million to do somatic cloning of the whole bloody forest of the planet. And it can be kept in an area at minus 40, maybe haploid cloning, in an area the size of your kitchen table. And that can be held forever, just in case we have the disasters that we have just been talking about. I have one mind. They couldn't do it in Harvard. I started to do it, but I've run out of money. So if there's anybody there with big pockets, and there haven't been so far, I would like to do that, to do the somatic cloning, somatic haploid cloning of the forest. All I need is one or two cells. That's all. See, it's easy to do. The idea is there. You can't kill an idea.
That is wonderful to end our program on today. I want to thank you. And by the way, we're going to finish our program the last 5 minutes by showing 5 minutes of the film Last Call for Tomorrow that you are prominently in, and we see you in the woods, filmed up in Canada. And hopefully people will take this opportunity to see how much help nature needs, and we all can do our own part. A, by cutting back on things we don't need. B, as she suggested, buy things that are union-made, that are fair trade-made, that are not being exploited in the form of having dresses made in Bangladesh. It's a terrible suffering to the people making them. We should re-energize America and do so, as she said, by holding hands, metaphorically respecting all life. I just believe that everyone should be invited to the table. No one sitting at the front, the top. Everyone sitting as equals in the spirit. Thank you very much for being on today. We certainly appreciate it. And I look forward.
I am honest, Jerry.
Oh, by the way, just so you might find this of interest, it's really, really difficult to get accepted into a film festival. There are over 15,000 documentaries made each year. So you're up against enormous competition. Last Call for Tomorrow is the most winning documentary in world history. We're approaching 300 official selections, wins a best documentary on the environment, on human rights. It's winning across the board on all these, and is considered the most important documentary on the environment ever done. So you're a very important part of that, and I want to thank you for your contribution and the others who participated in it.
You're welcome, I look forward to, and congratulations, congratulations, congratulations.
I look forward to our next conversation.
Thank
and that
you.
Said, you were listening to Dr. She has a lot of PhDs, Diana Burchford Kroeger, K-R-O-E-G-E-R, and she is the unquestionable global ambassador speaking on behalf of the world's trees and forests. And by the way, the tree here in Florida is the Malalucas, and they're everywhere, and now are a blight and a big cause of fires. We're going to close out today's program by showing you a clip from Last Call for Tomorrow. Thank you all for listening and watching, and have a nice day.
We're in the midst of the sixth mass extinction on planet Earth. We are warming the planet approximately 10 times faster than it was warmed during the Great Dying, the worst of the mass extinction events, when the global average temperature went from ice age to beyond hothouse, somewhere between 900 and about 19,000 years. We're headed there in as little as a decade.
We've been here only 150,000 years, and we've become so powerful that we are undermining the very things that keep us alive.
We're on the brink because 7.6 billion people demanding more and more and more. The so-called American dream has infected the entire planet.
We create a problem that we deny all of these years in order to support a fossil fuel system. And then when finally faced with the crisis, we're over the edge of the cliff. We then think we're smart enough, we're going to invent a new way of capturing that carbon and putting it down again. It's crazy. Nature already had that carbon capture and sequestration. They're called trees.
We've taken down the forests. Why did we do that? We didn't know what we were doing.
Who's responsible for the sixth extinction and for the Anthropocene? It's the capitalist system that has produced this crash in the number of species and in ecosystems around the world.
We've created a worldwide Auschwitz for animals, and we are killing 57 billion animals for our tables every year, as well as destroying the habitats of most of the creatures on the planet. We're living in a time in which 150 species are vanishing every day.
As the oceans become more acidic from greenhouse gas pollution, the world's largest traded food commodity, seafood, is threatened. It is estimated that by 2048, there will no longer be any seafood to eat